This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 71. We're going to catch up on all the latest cloud news, recorded live March 13th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Hey AC, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good, man. Doing good. How are you doing?
Not bad. Not bad. This week I was in sunny California for the DocuSign Momentum conference. Just dropped in and said hi down there and got out of, well, it's been sunny Seattle this winter. It's been kind of weird. So, but it was nice to get down to California.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool.
How about you?
I have been catching up this week. Last week I was in at the Angular conference in Salt Lake City, Utah. So NGConf, where I co-presented with a friend of mine, Dan Wallin. We did some stuff, some really cool news stuff that came out of that conference. They had, I know in the past we had a show where I kind of did the joke about the first shot in the JavaScript war, where Google last October, they announced something called AtScript, which was a superset of TypeScript. And long story short, smarter heads got together and the TypeScript team added all the stuff that the AtScript guys wanted. And so now AtScript is no more. And Google has now collaborated with Microsoft.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And now Angular 2.0 is going to be written in TypeScript. So that's really cool. That was really cool news. And I tell you what was really interesting about it is that got the most applause at the Angular conference than anything else that was there. So that was pretty cool.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of good videos and stuff. All the sessions are up online. There's a lot of, if anybody's interested in the Angular space, all the videos are up there, including talk about Angular 2.0 and migration and all that stuff. But the things that we focused on that I guess are interesting to our show here is one is that last week your team announced on the Office blog that now the Office 365 Files API and the SharePoint REST API now has support for CORS, which is cross-origin resource sharing, which lets you do...
Hooray!
Exactly, yeah. It lets you do cross-domain calls from the browser across services. And they said that in the next month or so, that we'll see support coming for the Exchange endpoints as well, the context calendar and mail one. So that's really big.
Yeah, that's huge for JavaScript developers, right? Building apps with just HTML and JavaScript and not having to have any back end to call the 365 APIs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big step forward. People were asking, felt like five or six times a day for this. It took us a little while to get our A into G, but yeah, that was really cool to get out. Reception was really good from our side.
Yeah. And then the other thing too that was big is that you guys also announced, or I guess you didn't really announce, this is more from the Azure guys, but they announced GA of version one of something called ADALJS, which is essentially Azure Active Directory now supports the OAuth 2 implicit flow, which allows you to do authentication without an intermediary. So you can do everything client side. And we showed using that in a project with the core support for Office 365 in an Angular app to create a 100% pure client side application, HTML, CSS, and JavaScript that leverages the Files API, the SharePoint REST API, authenticated with Azure AD, is very slick. So for those people who are interested in it, we actually created, right before we recorded this, I just finished submitting a pull request to the training content repository on the Office Dev account on GitHub. Mm. So github.com/OfficeDev/training content. And if you look in course number 7, module number 2 has the project that we used at NGConf, and it's all been modified into a hands-on lab and stuff. So the PR has been submitted. We also did two other things. We did a cool hackathon there where we did Angular apps living inside of Office and Excel Office apps.
Yeah, that sounded like it went really well. A whole bunch of people got in a room and what, there were 11 teams or something like that, I heard?
Yep, there's about 40 or 50 people.
Mm.
Man, I tell you what, I walked into this conference with very low expectations for Microsoft. I thought that we were going to be the person that was going to be attacked pretty well. I was floored, absolutely shocked that, especially at the hackathon, people were interested in building Office apps. And we even heard one of the engineers for the Office 365, Rob Howard, even heard a couple guys walking out and said, I wasn't even thinking about doing this before. This is interesting. I could actually build, I have some ideas for some of these. And no lie, the last day of the conference that afternoon, I'm sitting in the conference, finally found a table in the conference to be able to do my work. And I was floored. Guy next to me was from the hackathon, and I glanced over and I see office.context, and he was flat out building another Outlook app with Angular that had nothing to do with the one that he built the night before. It was really slick. It was a totally different conference, man. Microsoft got great reaction. There were 20-minute sessions, single-track conference, 20-minute sessions. As a presenter, it was challenging. As a consumer, it was awesome. Challenging in a good way. I actually liked it. So it's a great show.
Yeah, it sounded like it went really well. And it's really cool that the reception was really warm to it. And, you know, that was our goal, right, to go talk to these folks and just get in front of them. So that's cool.
I've got a wrap-up post on my blog, so we'll put that in the show notes and some of these other links and stuff so people can take a look at it. But yeah, it was very cool. It was a very good experience.
Nice. Hey, well, we've got a bit of a news show. Hey, thanks for filling in, by the way, last week, getting Julie on the show. I listened to the show. It was really interesting. I hope everybody else found it really interesting. It was something a bit different for the Microsoft Cloud show and talking about Google. And it sounds like we've had some pretty good download numbers on that show, which is really cool.
I'm shocked. Facebook told us. So we have a thing set up where the post automatically gets added as a post on our page on Facebook. And Facebook said that show is performing 85% better than any other show that we had. That's surprising.
Yeah. Hey, I guess it looks, you know, it's something pretty different for us, right? And people are like, huh? They're talking to Google. What? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was.
That's awesome.
It was a fun discussion. I learned a lot too. So it was interesting. It's tricky because they call this what we call like Word, Excel, and Outlook and PowerPoint. They call those apps. So when you say, yeah, we're working on Google Apps, it's not like we're talking about it with 365 where we say, I'm building a custom thing. It's no, that's an out of the box thing.
Oh, no, don't worry. We have all of that naming confusion too. And I say that because we've got Office apps.
Yeah.
Right. We call them the Office apps. We call them Office apps for iPad, for example. And you, when you say you want to build an app for what? You want to build an app inside an app.
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry, we got all of that kooky confusion too.
It was, I had to get it down last week. I was building apps for Office for Outlook, or Office apps for Outlook. I think, yeah, whatever. I thought I had it down.
Yeah. It's tongue twisting.
Yeah.
Hey, should we get into some news?
Absolutely. Let's dive into it.
Okay. So the first one, I'll kick this off, I guess. The first piece of news is there is a new OneDrive API, and this is pretty cool for developers. This is for OneDrive, for the consumer offering of OneDrive. So it's a new API that lets people, you know, do things with files and things inside of OneDrive, similar to how you have a files API in Office 365 that lets you do the same stuff in Office 365 or in OneDrive for Business, I should say. So that recently has come out. Now, our mission here is to make the APIs the same over time. And so they're slowly stepwise getting closer to each other. And so that should hopefully make it much easier to build an app that either gets or manipulates or saves files off into your OneDrive from, say, a phone app or a web app or something along those lines. And then ultimately being able to build that app and connect it to either OneDrive for Business or your OneDrive personal account and have it work would be pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. So new OneDrive API.
Yeah, that's very cool. That is very cool. Another one too, another Office 365 bit of news here was that I actually saw you post this on Facebook, but it said there's an article about how everyone is talking about Office 365 is suddenly beating Google Apps. And it's an interesting article from a company that was based off of a company that does a lot of like third-party migration security and management of usernames and passwords. For companies, and how they have seen in the last 6 to 12 months just this hockey stick effect of Office 365 taking off and how it is a significant part of their business over Google Apps. And if I'm not mistaken, the guy in the article, and this isn't just some opinion piece, this is actually evidence. He's got a graph on there, shows a lot more information about his customers than I thought he would. But he even has something on there where he says something to the extent that he expects in the next, I think, 6 months, that he expects to see it supplant Salesforce as far as his customer base. That was kind of surprising.
I think it's probably worth pointing out, if I've read this article correctly, So the company is Okta, which is quite a popular, basically identity management federation and so forth. They sort of manage it much like ADFS, but sort of in the cloud. And I believe the stats that they're showing is Okta usage with those other services, right? So what he's saying is in the last 6 months, if I've read this correctly, in the last 6 months, their customers are using Okta with Office 365 at a very quickly growing pace. So I'm not saying that, you know, Office 365 isn't growing at a rapid pace at all. I just wanted to caveat it with saying that I think these stats are their usage, like their product usage with Office 365, with Salesforce, with Box, with Google Apps, and so forth. So they've seen a big uptick in for their customers in the last wee while. Yeah, that was pretty interesting to see. I guess identity is a huge problem for a lot of organizations, and these guys are one of the market leaders in this space. And so them seeing a big uptick in 365 usage with their customers is pretty cool. And there's a cool chart. You can go check it out. It doesn't show any numbers, like how many customers that they're talking about in each of these different categories, but it does show the relative sort of usage levels across Salesforce, 365, Box, and Google Apps. And so you can take a look at that.
Very cool. So I have a couple. So that's our 365 news. I have a few rapid fire Azure bits that we'll throw out there. And if you're interested in this, we'll have links in the show notes where you can go take a look at it. Yeah, if you don't mind, I think we just throw out just a couple of these just in the interest of time here.
Yeah, go to town.
So first one is, first there's a save the date for news related to Azure on March the 24th. So I'll have a link there. You need to go jump to the site, go sign up. There's some really cool news coming out. I don't know what it is. I wouldn't be surprised if you know what it is, CJ.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Here's the fun part of one person being external and one being internal. So I just get teased with this one. I've signed up and I'll be there.
Yeah, no, me too. That should be a cool event. It's about a month or so before Build. Mm. They got some cool stuff. So definitely tune in.
I guess they have so much stuff coming at Build that they got to have some stuff early. So
yeah, well, that wouldn't surprise me, right?
Oh man, let's ship 50 features on a Tuesday again. So that's one. Another one is the Azure team has announced an SDK for Application Insights, but for Java. They've also announced GA, general availability, for the iOS Offline Sync SDK. And they have another piece here about introducing email notifications for Azure Site Recovery. So that's if you have issues with like your VMs about network issues or bandwidth issues, and all of a sudden the machine isn't responding, you can now set up email alerts so you get notified right away when there's an issue. And then the other one too that I think is really cool with this is around SQL DB data masking. So essentially what this is, and I don't know if this is new, but this is something I heard about recently on the Azure podcast. But essentially what this does is that, you know, we've got data inside of our Azure SQL databases where we want to make sure it's protected. So like say it's a social security number or a credit card or a phone or something that's protected. So what they now have is that you can go in and you can flag certain fields as protected fields. And then you use a special connection string that has something like secure in the connection string. And now, no matter what you do with your application, whenever the data comes back for those fields, it always comes back as masked. So when you use that connection string, you would use it on like say your public site or the site that you're using for that your customers can use to manage their data. They would never be able to see the credit card information or whatever. So even if the website is hacked, it's still going to use the same connection string, but that connection string is never going to return back the unsecure, unmasked data.
So even if they manage to sneak in like a SQL injection script into your site somewhere or hack your site some other way, they still can't get the data back from the database. Mm-hmm. Sort of unmasked.
Exactly, yeah. And if you have another app that you would use to manage it.
So it's not encrypted. It's just blatantly, like the data is just not returned.
Exactly. They just essentially, they do a string replacement on a social security number and replace it with stars.
Cool.
And so then you'd have like a separate application you use for like the back-end customer management that's not exposed to the world. And that one would not use a secure string where you can actually get to all the data. So that's pretty slick.
Gotcha. That's helping, I guess. Yeah, it's for those situations where you think you've plugged all the holes in your website, but maybe you missed one.
Mm-hmm.
And even if somebody finds it, they still can't get access to your sensitive bits.
Exactly, yeah. You want to keep careful with your sensitive bits. You don't want to have those flapping around.
Definitely.
Gotcha.
Yeah, definitely not. It's especially unmasked.
Definitely, yeah. And the last bit of Azure news that we had here was simplifying the authentication flow. So if you've ever popped up in Fiddler and you look at the authentication process, you'll see, you know, we're just cranking ourselves up here.
We're so juvenile.
You haven't even had any coffee yet.
No.
Like 3 minutes out of bed.
I get worse. It's probably I get worse, yeah.
So there's the authentication flow. If you look at Fiddler, when you do a standard authentication with Azure AD, you have generally seen where it goes to, I think it's logon.windows.net, and then it does a little bit of a jump back and forth, and then it goes to msonline.net. And essentially what it does is that one of those is the old ACS endpoint, and one of those is the new Azure AD endpoint. And what they've done is they just said, hey, look, now we've standardized it. The old one still works just fine. It just redirects over to the new one. But this is going to make the authentication process a little bit cleaner, a little bit faster, because then you're not jumping between domains and caching of resources and blah, 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 blah. So it's a small little tweak, but I'll have a link to it in the show notes for everybody.
Yeah, nice. So that'll help simplify things. Yeah.
You got a few Google things for us?
Yeah. So Google have followed on from last week's show, I guess. This is more sort of in the platform end of things rather than the apps end of things. But Google has a new cloud pub sub real-time messaging service that's in public beta. And apparently it was in like an alpha before this, but it's gone into beta now. And so if you're familiar with Azure services, this is effectively a service bus messaging system, right? So it gives you the ability to pop messages on one end and have things receive those messages. You know, you publish messages and there's a whole bunch of subscribers that subscribe to them. And so it's typically used for like intercommunication between different bits of your application. So say either from a front end, like a mobile app, for example, to a back end service, or maybe it's between parts of your backend service, you know, between say one compute instance and another or something along those lines. And so it's kind of critical to building large scale, massively scalable cloud solutions. And pretty much everybody's got one of these. So it's definitely a move in the right direction for Google bringing the cloud pub sub capability to its backend messaging. Mm. Really important for building out these big things, you know, because it's the ability to basically, you know, being able to send, many thousands and thousands of messages back and forth and signaling between your different components of your apps. It's a really important. It also means like for, parallel processing of things, you can have one part of your application popping on a whole bunch of jobs onto a queue for processing and then have multiple instances in your backend popping those jobs off a queue. And so being able to do that with just a database and some code is quite hard to do well, or next to impossible to do well. And so this sort of pub sub model gives you the ability to do that sort of job scheduling type stuff really easy.
Yeah, it's cool they have that. I mean, just kind of their platform as a service play is catching up to what Microsoft has done and what what AWS has done as well. But it's nice to see that there's another competitor in the world. So
yeah, I need to look at what the Azure pricing is. They've said it's 40 cents per million API calls for the first 100 million. And then it sort of goes to 25 cents per million for the next, only 2.4 billion operations.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah. I wonder how they came up with that number. I wonder if it was literally throwing a dart at a board, with a $2.4 billion operation number.
Yeah.
Or whether there was some science behind that, you know. When you're up in that realm of numbers, surely, what's a couple of billion between friends?
That's pretty cool. And we have one more bit of Google news here. Did you want to do this one?
I can kick it off, then you can maybe use your analogy.
Okay, go for it.
The next one is Google Cloud Storage Nearline. So this is basically cheap storage, right? It's basically saying, hey, there's a whole lot of data that you don't necessarily need sort of in very low number of millisecond latency, but you've usually got a lot of it. So this could be old archival data for some reason, or a whole bunch of file data that's not accessed very frequently or something. And so what Google have introduced is Cloud Storage Nearline, which is, in their words, a simple, low-cost, fast-response storage service with quick data backup, retrieval, and access. And so although it's not, when they say quick and fast response, when we're talking about, cheap storage, we're talking about multi-second response time. So in this case, they're saying about 3 second response times for data retrieval, but at extremely low cost. So 1 cent per gigabyte for cost, which if you're using, much quicker storage, within the realm of a few milliseconds, those costs are significantly different, and the access times are also significantly different, mind you.
And you don't need, for a lot of stuff, you don't always need to have the instant access to everything. So Azure doesn't have something like this. AWS does. But to the best of my knowledge, Azure doesn't have this with a blob storage. But I use AWS because they have it integrated right into the OS of the NAS to go back up straight to Amazon S3 storage. But and at the time when I did it, when I uploaded everything, they didn't have Azure support. Now they do, but I've got about 18 or 19 terabytes backed up over to Amazon. So,
wow.
Yeah, lots of porn.
Car porn, probably, right? F1 pictures, no doubt.
Sure, exactly. Yes, yeah. But essentially what this does is that, I use it for backup, and a lot of people use the cloud for backing up stuff. And for backups, you don't need to have immediate access to your backups. Having this is very similar to something that Amazon has called Glacier. So I have stuff that goes up to AWS. I'm probably never going to delete this stuff, but it backs up our digital pictures, some of our digital home movies, a lot of my tax information, a lot of project stuff and everything. And so it's not stuff that I need to get to unless catastrophe happens at home. So instead, I just say, hey, look, after a month, if I haven't accessed it, then push it off into Glacier. And it's a fraction of the cost. But if I want to get access to it, I post a request. I can do it through a REST API. I post a request. But the time to the first byte coming back to me can be anywhere on the magnitude of 10 seconds or 30 minutes or an hour.
I bet there's some dude like printing a paper off, right? Getting that, oh, AC wants his SD movie, and then runs into a mountain. Finds the tape, comes back, loads it up, spools it up, and then starts playing it, right?
You ever walked into an auto parts store and you walk to the back and they have these huge rows of all these parts and you can't go back there?
Yeah.
But they have all the parts. And so I just imagine that going on for a Matrix style kind of aisle going down, oh, there's a guy way down there. It's going, what do we need? We need 2 bits from AC. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Right.
Aisle 12,045, row, shelf. It's going to be a good. It's such so big, but
yeah. And there's some backup partners or some, I guess backup is the right word for these guys. Backup partners that have partnered with them on this. So Veritas, Symantec, Net Backup app for being able to back your stuff up to the cloud. Mm. NetApp, Iron Mountain. Geminair, I think that's how you pronounce it. Mm. So yeah, a bunch of different solutions or services or applications that can sort of connect up to the storage and start pushing stuff off to it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I guess it's it works for that massive quantities of data at sort of low cost where speed is not as important. Having said that, 3 seconds isn't bad.
No, 3 seconds is not bad at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Depends on how impatient you really are, but that's not bad at all.
No, not bad. Cool. So so that looks like the news. Anything else you want to add before we sort of wrap up?
Yeah, I have 2 picks this week. I don't know if you have any picks, but I have 2. So the first one is, and it just got released yesterday, but it's Jeremy Thake on your team does the Office 365 podcast. And we did an interview last week with Jeremy, myself, and Dan Wallin, where we sit down and talked about stuff from ng-conf and the ADAL JS and the core support and stuff. And I listened to it yesterday. The episode, it was absolute fun listening to the episode. We cut up so much in there. We were all delirious from just a long week.
Yeah.
But it was, I can't tell you how much more fun it was to actually record that. I was laughing so hard too. We did it in my hotel room and I was laughing so hard 2 or 3 times I almost fell off the back of my chair when we were doing it. But that's one of the picks. So I'll put that in the show notes.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I don't remember what episode it was, but
I haven't managed to listen to it yet, but I will definitely do so. I have a completely non-tech related pick.
Awesome. Go for it.
It's called The Greatest Bachelor Party Ever Turns the Groom into Rambo.
That's getting posted.
We'll post a link to this guy, to this thing in the show notes. But effectively, this guy was, getting married, obviously. And this guy has had a lifelong fascination with Rambo, who's getting married. And so his friends made a 20-minute video of his bachelor party, which started the day, basically being arrested by this fake cop and then walking him through the entire sort of Rambo movie. You know, he turned his day into a sort of a your real day as Rambo kind of thing. And so they
that's awesome.
So they basically kidnapped this guy. And sort of then the rest of his day was basically walking through the movie as if he was playing the part of Rambo. Anyway, so they recorded the whole thing. They must be film students or in the film industry or something like that. But they got this 20-minute video that that documents his day, and it is absolute gold. Like, it's hilarious. So
you have to share that link, yes.
You know, because some people, they put you in a dress, they stick a, you know, kiss me sign to your forehead, and then they get proceed to get you really drunk. This guy was literally Rambo for the day.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty well done. Like, this dude has some good friends.
That's cool. That's very cool. I look forward to reading that one.
Yeah.
So I have one more too. So I've been playing with Raspberry Pi, the Raspberry Pi 2 that just came out, the quad core little 1 gig microcontroller. I got Node.js running on it. It's pretty slick. But as I was kind of poking around and stuff.
Oh, you mean the device we're going to be giving out at the office booth at Build?
Did you just say that?
Oh, shit. I might have let the cat out of the bag.
I didn't know that was public yet.
Yeah, we're going to do some cool giveaways. Not like one or two, like hundreds of the little buggers.
Oh, very cool. So I found this site. It's called CircuitScribe. And so essentially what you do is there's a book and it shows you how to build little circuits. And so what you do is you make the circuits that has little devices where you can have like a LED light or batteries or motors or whatever. But what's neat is that they give you a pen and a piece of paper and you put a little metal sheet behind the paper. And you literally, instead of using wires, you use a pen to draw a little circle and fill it in, draw a line to another circle, fill that in. And you put the circuits on the circles. And because you have a metal sheet behind the piece of paper, they stick to the metal sheet. And so you build circuits, but without any of the wires and stuff, just using ink.
Wow.
It's really cool. So go to circuitscribe.com. There's a couple of videos for it. You click on one of the videos and watch the guy show how he builds it. And it's a little, I don't want to say it's flaky, but it's not like using a ballpoint pen, you draw one line and poof, it works. You have to kind of like color it in. So imagine like having like a pen that's dying a little bit. And so you have to really like draw the like when you're trying to sign a receipt at a restaurant and the pen doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like that, but it's pretty freaking cool. It's a really cool concept to draw sketching it out. It's like literally like, let's build some hardware with just pencils.
I wonder if that's how they did the Apple Watch.
You know what's so funny about that damn watch? The $10,000 one, I'm just like, oh, it's ridiculous. $10,000, like
17. For the most expensive.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No. The watch edition, you know, the fancy wanky one.
Yeah.
Starts at 10,000 bucks.
Oh, I didn't realize it went up to 17. I thought it was just 10.
Look, I don't mean to sound so cynical. Like, I actually think there's some really cool scenarios for that style of wearable.
Yeah.
But yeah, 17 grand. Whoa.
What really caught my eye about that I thought was comical was the people that were just poo-pooing it right away when they said $10,000 watch. You go, who in the world is going to buy a $10,000 watch? I'm like, with all due
respect. Lots of people.
Yeah, it's like, with all due respect, they're not the first ones to come out with a $10,000 watch. There are,
yep.
I don't know if you've heard of Cartier. I don't know if you've heard of Rolex. I don't know if you've heard of like Breitling. But
yeah, but those ones are different, right? This will be, you're literally buying a $17,000 watch that will be worth $0 in 2 years.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
Well, maybe not zero because of the gold content. It'll be worth, say, $2,000.
They're talking about how you can, about how because the watch casing is the gold piece, that there potentially will be a way for you to swap out the guts of the watch when the new version comes out.
Now that would be smart.
Yeah.
But that would be very smart. Or at least being able to get your watch retrofitted by Apple, take it back in and get it switched out for, you know, another couple of thousand bucks.
Yeah. I just found that funny. Like, oh, nobody's going to buy it. It's totally screwed up. And it's like,
oh no, there are a lot of really stupid people in the world too.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. You know, silly purchases, not stupid mentally, like silly purchases. People buy, you know, you're into cars that are so ludicrously expensive that they can't possibly match what it actually costs to build.
Yeah.
Or just the materials alone and the markup and things like that is redonkulous because of a badge or because of a brand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, same deal, just on a smaller scale. So I definitely get the scenarios for it. Like, there's some cool scenarios with the watch, but I don't know. Like, I just don't think it looks any good, to be honest. That's my, I'd be open to it. I just think it needs to look a little better.
I'm curious to see the reviews that come out about this. I'm curious to see how this thing goes. It's how does it sell coming right out of the box? I'm sure, or coming right out of the gate. I'm sure it's going to sell out.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because it's Apple, and as you get, there's a fanboy element. But I'm really curious to see what goes on after that.
There's some cool elements to it, right? It's going to be, wearables are definitely like the next trend, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's not too long before we just don't have a phone anymore and it's just on your wrist or whatever. That seems like the logical progression from here. It's just going to take some time.
Yeah.
But the, you know, I like the idea of being able to glance down and see, you know, my next calendar appointment. Like, that's really appealing to me. But I don't want to give up my sort of what I call my classic timepiece for it, right? And so are people going to double fist? Are they going to be like, they're going to have their watch they like on one hand and their device on the other hand? Like, I don't know. I'm not going to give up my Omega.
So that's the way I am. I mean, I'm a bit of a watch guy. And so I've got a couple, I like, there's something about the technical, the mechanical and the classic. And I mean, there's a bit of jewelry to it as well, but
yeah,
of a classic watch that I like on my wrist. But on my other wrist, yes, I wear a Microsoft band and I absolutely love it for the fitness side. And I like it when I have the, you know, when you get a text or you get a call and you're driving or you're at a conference or you're talking to somebody, you can just kind of just glance at your wrist real quick without pulling your phone out and being rude. So it's for some people. It's not for others. To me, I'm with you. I don't see myself wearing two watches and I wouldn't be ready to give it up, but I definitely am looking forward to going to see it in the store and see, you know, talking to people who actually have one. So,
yeah. And look, no doubt there's going to be new ones, right? Every year or whatever, new designs and capabilities. Like, it doesn't even have a GPS, for goodness sake. Craziness. And when you write apps for it, your apps run on the phone. So you can't go out without your phone, like say running or to the gym. Like the killer scenario for my wife, for example, she goes to the gym. She has this massive phone strapped to her arm just so she can listen to music. Kind of ridiculous. Wouldn't it be cool if it had like Bluetooth in it that connects up to your Bluetooth headset? It's got enough for music and things like that on it. And then you can go to the gym and leave your phone in the locker.
Mm.
Like, that seems like a complete no-brainer. And it sounds like that's where they're heading, right? It's got storage, or it's going to have storage, or it's got storage, and you're going to be able to write apps that just run on the phone. But for now, you need that just run on the watch. But for now, you need the phone.
Yeah. I mean, I've got, with the band, it's nice. I'm doing a 15K race tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to taking my phone and not having to wear it on my shoulder or my arm this time. And that now it's because of Bluetooth headset, and I'm going to put it on the Mophie battery pack. And I have a little pocket that's got my gels and stuff. Put my phone in the pocket with the gels, and it'll be sitting on, you know, around my waist on my back and everything, but I'll be able to use my band to look at everything. But same deal. It's the same. I don't want to have this big phone that I got to deal with on my wrist. It's just, my arm, but we're getting there. They said the wearables market didn't exist. That's what all the pundits say, that wearables market doesn't exist until Apple gets into it. So they're in. Let's see where it goes.
Yeah, exactly. It's an exciting space.
Definitely. Cool, man.
Thanks very much for a great show, AC.
Absolutely. Always. And we'll be back at it. This is getting kind of hard for us to keep our cadence going at this time of year. We're both going crazy with these conferences coming up.
Oh, my goodness. That's going to get carnage. You're going to have to excuse our poor production schedule if we get off rails a little bit in the next month or so.
Oh yeah.
We'll try.
We're going to miss a few.
We'll try real hard.
But hopefully we'll be shipping a lot of stuff that we could build.
Exactly, exactly.
Cool. All right, man.
Cheers.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.